This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from the Aircraft Electronics Association show in Dallas, Texas. I'm with Jane Pointer, who's the CEO of WorldView. Some of our listeners and viewers will know that WorldView is a kind of a near space balloon project in the space tourism business. And Jane's here talking about that a little bit. Can you, one thing I didn't realize about this is I knew it had the balloon, but I didn't realize it descended under a parafoil. But tell us a little bit about the balloon system itself, and I'm particularly interested in knowing about the life support being developed for that system.
So the balloon itself is a similar balloon that has been actually used for decades to fly large telescopes to space, things like that that NASA has been flying for a very long time. In fact, our CTO saw these kinds of balloons flown because his father's an astrophysicist and flew a large telescope under one of these balloons, which is pretty cool. And so the balloon is pretty straightforward technology at this time, ripe for lots of innovation. And it's really pretty reliable. And then below that, we have the parafoil, just as you might imagine. Of course, has some innovations in it as well so that it flies well at 100,000 feet when it detaches from the balloon. And then below that, you have a sealed capsule where six passengers and two crew will be in a pressurized capsule, so no spacesuit or anything like that at this time.
I'll get back to that parafoil in a minute. First, I should mention that WorldView and the technology you've developed was used in the record-setting skydive of Alan Eustace last fall.
Yes.
So some of these systems are related. Tell us a little bit about the life support system in that capsule, which will hold six and two pilots, or is it four and two pilots?
Six passengers, two pilots. Yeah. So, I mean, the life support system is very similar to the kinds of things that you would find on the International Space Station. So Paragon Space Development Corporation, who's a partner company of ours, actually WorldView spun out of Paragon, has been doing life support for 20 years. It'll be pretty straightforward space technologies.
How does it pressurize and maintain cabin environment? What does it use for a power source?
Oh, a power source. So a combination of battery systems. We're looking at possibly putting also some photovoltaics on it. But battery systems.
And how far along is that vehicle?
So this year, we're really focused on the aerodynamics. So as you might imagine, we're having to really work with the parafoil at 100,000 feet, as I mentioned. And that's something that we're really focused on this year. Also, the launch systems and the landing systems. By the end of this year, the end of 2015, we hope to be flying a full-scale system all the way from launch to landing. Full-scale balloon, full-scale parafoil, everything, but with a mass simulator, everything but the capsule. Same aerodynamics, same mass as the capsule. And then next year, we're going to really focus on the capsule.
Has the capsule flown scale at all, or is it just still in development?
Yeah, the capsule itself is still in development.
And tell us a little bit about this ride. So I think you said it was $75,000, and what does that entail? What does the customer get for that?
So if you imagine getting up very early in the morning when it's really dark out and you step into a comfortable cabin with six other people and then the two pilots, get your beverage of choice, sit down in front of these large windows, and you will gently take off. And you will go up through the atmosphere for about an hour and a half until you're above 99% of the Earth's atmosphere. And then you'll start to see the sunrise over the horizon. The sky will, of course, remain black. And you will see the incredible curvature of the Earth and the sun come across the ground below you. You'll be up there for about 1 to 2 hours. And then we will start coming back down. The parafoil will then release from the balloon, and you will glide back down under parafoil back to predetermined landing sites.
All right, now back to that parafoil. That parafoil is going to deploy at the peak altitude when the balloon is cut away. What kind of aerodynamics and speed are we talking about on that parafoil?
I wish I had our engineers with me who are working on the parafoil system. But I think we're talking something like a couple of hundred miles an hour at peak altitude, at peak speed.
And then it gets slower as it descends.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And you also said it had basically what amounts to a reserve system of parachutes. How
yes.
does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'll be akin to the systems that are used on private planes now.
And is that a single parachute or multiple?
I don't know that we know the answer to that yet. I would hesitate to really respond to that. I think that's something that we will know very soon, early next year probably.
Are there any regulatory hurdles at the moment?
Well, we're very happy that we are regulated under the AST regime, which is the commercial spacecraft. So that's great. And the FAA has been fantastic to work with.
You expect to launch the first paying customers when?
About 2017. So as I mentioned, this year we're really focused on aerodynamics. Next year we're really focused on the capsule. And then the following year we're really focused on, you know, many, many test flights to get us all flying.
And what do you expect to be the frequency of flight?
In the first year of commercial flight, we're looking at something on the order of once a week. They'll probably be clumped, but about 50 flights in a year. And actually, when we did the Stratec space jump last year with Alan Eustace that you mentioned earlier, where we took Alan up to, in a spacesuit, hanging underneath the balloon to 136,000 feet, where he space dived back down to Earth, we actually did three flights with him back to back within a 3-week period.
Would there be multiple capsules?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. We'll initially have two capsules and then grow from there.
What about the supply of helium? We've been asked this before. Helium is getting to be a bit of a precious commodity. Is there enough of it to support this?
Yes, there is. And, you know, we are already flying unmanned systems as well, so we do a lot of robotic flights. And as much of the world is already using hydrogen to fly balloons, we will be moving to hydrogen specifically for the unmanned systems at some point. We haven't yet, but at some point we will ease into hydrogen, incredibly safe. And we may do that with the human system. That's to be determined.
Yeah, I would imagine that the kind of safety systems put in place now are far greater than they were in the 30s when dirigibles were commercialized.
So what's really interesting is that we think of course, honestly, the reason we're not using hydrogen is because the first thing that anybody thinks of is the Hindenburg and the terrible tragedy that occurred. That had almost nothing to do with the hydrogen. It turned out that what the Hindenburg was painted in was a coating that was highly flammable, and there was some static that occurred and caused a fire. And then, of course, once the exterior of the shell caught fire and then oxygen started to get mixing with the hydrogen, then, of course, the hydrogen was a problem. But we've actually done tests ourselves with balloons with hydrogen to go, what happens if you get a hole in your balloon and there's a fire? And we've actually had the hydrogen blow out the flame as it escaped the balloon, because it has to mix with oxygen to do anything. So as I mentioned earlier, balloons are flown all the time with hydrogen because, you know, it takes some careful handling on the ground, but in the balloon and at altitude, it's very safe.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Shane. We'll look forward to the first launch, which I guess is going to be in New Mexico.
We don't know yet where the first launch is going to be. I mean, we're flying already, and we've flown from New Mexico. We've flown from several launch sites in Arizona. So we'll probably have multiple sites that we're flying from, possibly all around the country, but certainly in the Southwest.
Okay, we'll watch for it.
Great.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AEA in Dallas, Texas. We've been speaking with Jane Poynter, CEO of Worldview. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.